creativity in itself is vulnerable. Like, even if you don't share it online, it's super vulnerable to like have the like audacity to sit down and draw something or like to make something for fun. Like, so anyone who's baseline creative and making stuff, you've accomplished a lot, really, trust me.
The Perspective Podcast is fuel for your mind and creative grind. Each week, we break down the art of healthy hustling, overcoming the inner critic, and growing your creative business. What's going on? You're listening to episode 178 of the Perspective Podcast. I'm your host, Scotty Russell of Perspective Collective, and my mission is to help you grow a fulfilling, profitable, and sustainable creative side hustle. At the end of each episode, I plug a listener of the week, so stick around to figure out how you can get a permanent shout out on a future episode. Quick announcement, if you want to learn from the best on how to powerfully launch your creative career with a successful, shareable passion project, then do not sleep on enrolling in the next round of Lauren Hom's Passion to Paid course. Enrollment takes place today, 29th of July through August 5th, and you can sign up now over at p2pscotty.com. That's P, the number 2, P, Scotty with a Y.com, and you can save 10% with promo code PERSPECTIVE10 at checkout. And if you don't know, this course is 40% creative, 30% marketing, and 30% business, and it was designed to teach you how to create a project that can help you attract freelance work, master a new skill, grow your social media following, build a creative side hustle, which I'm all about here, or tailor your portfolio to get hired for your dream full-time job. So if you enroll before August 5th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time, you get access to these bonuses. So the first one is 3 group Q&A sessions with Lauren. Those will be spread out over the next 3 months. Sign up. She'll have all the info for you there, as well as a group Q&A session with her agent. Again, learn more and lock in these dope-ass bonuses by visiting p2pscotty.com and save 10% with Perspective10 at checkout. I'll also have this tucked away into the show notes as well. Let me ask you a question. Are you feeling overwhelmed that freelance is the only path to creative success? You know, you're feeling like freelance is the only way you can get clout and do your thing full time and be successful. Do you? Well, it's easy to feel that way based on so many stories of those crushing it in the creative industry. You know, some of the biggest juggernauts, that's the path they took. And it's so easy to fall into the trap to feel like that's the path you have to take. But what if there were other paths you could take or create on your own terms? And luckily, we'll talk about all of these different paths and more as my homegirl Lauren Hom joins us for round 2 of the podcast. She's a hand lettering artist with a knack for marketing who loves helping creatives and brands get more eyes on their work, and she's pretty damn good at it too. And of course, she works with big baller brands like Google, Hallmark, YouTube, Starbucks, and more. But what I truly love and respect about Lauren is how she serves her audience with absurd amounts of value, like her free resource library, her What the Fuck Should I Letter generator, and her weekly homework series, and the popular Passion to Paid course, which we'll talk a little bit about later on in this episode. So get ready to take hella notes as we chat about why freelancing isn't your only option. Balancing creating and marketing yourself, building confidence by taking action, laying your foundation with passion projects, marketing for creatives, and more. If you're ready to grow your creative pursuits by mixing marketing with your passions, then today's episode is exactly for you. And before we get started, you can find the show notes and a video of this conversation over at perspective-collective.com/178. If you found value in this episode, please do me a favor, spread the good word by sharing a screenshot or a video of you listening or working to this in the background. Tag me as well as Hom Sweet Hom on Instagram so we can connect and I can reshare the love back. As always, keep an open mind and act on anything that inspires you today. Let's go. PC family, today we have back on Lauren Hom for round 2 of the Perspective Podcast. Welcome back. How are you doing today?
Hello, I'm doing good. Excited to be back.
It's great to have you back. So for those who want to do a deep dive and get to know more about Lauren, go back to episode 75, and this is like 170, so over 100 episodes ago. So yeah, go really get to know her because we're going to dive right into the meat. That's at perspective-collective.com/75. So for those who somehow don't know in this creative community or they're a new listener, give us the skinny on who you are, what you do, and most importantly, why people should care, because that's that marketing business tactic I really want to drive home with people.
Ooh. Hello, person unfamiliar with my work. My name is Lauren Hom. I'm a former advertising art director turned lettering artist. I go by the name Hom Sweet Hom pretty much everywhere on the internet. And yeah, I do commercial hand lettering. I teach online classes about lettering and creative marketing. And I am a self-proclaimed passion project person. That's probably the word I associate the most with my name. But I built my career by making personal work and then figuring out a system to like churn out these personal projects that kind of checked the box of like creatively satiating, but also beneficial to my career, and kind of found that sweet spot. And that's what I continue to do and teach others to do now too.
See, my friends, like that's an elevator pitch. That sums it up right there. We were kind of briefly talking about before we got on just the balancing of the creative hat as well as like the business marketing hat. And I think you do such an incredible job with it. And that's why people are attracted to, because they want to learn how to do it too. You made a name for yourself building personal projects from passion. Like that immediately is hard not to be like, oh shit, I want to do that too. I would like to dive for those just tuning in. Like this is the whole premise of this episode is how to balance those two, you know, because a lot of people are like, man, I feel like I have to do freelance, but there's some other things they want to do on the side. And maybe freelance is holding them back for pursuing these other routes. So I would like to hear kind of your story about how you focused on either building or how you fell into it, building like your personal brand and finding your voice and your style and then attracting clients along the way. Or like, how did this all happen?
Wow. Okay. Let me take it back. Well, for me, you know, I always tell people I'm an accidental lettering artist. I went to school for advertising. I thought I wanted to be a creative director at an ad agency for a long time. And while I was in school, I went to the School of Visual Arts. We had to take a couple mandatory design classes and type classes. I took my first intro to typography class, and one of our first assignments was to draw letters real big, and I completely fell in love with it, and I had a knack for it. I was like finished. It's like when you're a kid and like you finish the math test first. It was the same thing with this, and I continued to have teachers outside of the ad program be like, hey, have you thought about design? And I kind of brushed it aside because I was so laser focused on this goal I had set of I want to work in advertising. So did that, and I never stopped pursuing lettering though. I always found my way back to it. I would try to incorporate it into my ad campaigns and any design projects. And as some of you who have been following my work for a while know, I got my like big break in 2012. I started a passion project just for fun. I was lettering little white lies that my roommates and I would tell ourselves, innocent stuff like, you know, calories don't count on the weekend, or I'll be there in 5 minutes. And it just caught this wave of the internet and took off and started getting featured. You know, I will say that my advertising background had primed me for this. Little did I know, because my brain was trained to think in campaigns, that's exactly what I did for this project. I gave it a name. So the name was Daily Dishonesty. I made a separate Tumblr blog for it, so it had its own place to live. You know, all the colors were cohesive. I kind of branded this little project and sent it out into the world. And the way I packaged it up, plus the idea, it was just so easy to share. You could get it right away. You could share it with people who would think it was funny. You'd obviously have no incentive to share it with anyone who didn't think it was funny. And it just caught this wind, and it catapulted me into features on design blogs, and that led to a book deal, and that clout from the book deal probably led to getting more freelance work as a lettering artist. And you know, keep in mind that before Daily Dishonesty, the kind of freelance work I was doing was like gigs off of Craigslist. I was just trying to freelance as a student for experience, I suppose, but I had no idea what exactly I wanted to do. And I had never even entertained the idea of doing design full-time as a freelancer anytime soon. And Daily Dishonesty basically catapulted me into the spotlight, and then all these inquiries started pouring in, and just over the next year or two, you know, I graduated, got my first job in advertising, but this lettering momentum that I had built never stopped. And then I quit my job after a while because I realized, hey, I could give this lettering thing a try. Like, I could always go back to the ad industry if this just doesn't work out. Like, the worst case scenario is that I just go back. And so I followed my gut and did freelance. But like you mentioned, once I became an established freelancer, I then, the same way that I kind of moved from the ad industry to the lettering industry, new stuff is coming into your orbit all the time. And so teaching was a thing that kind of came into my orbit through a chance encounter with someone who worked at Skillshare, led to my first Skillshare class, which then kind of led to more teaching in-person workshops and then online workshops. And now my business is pretty much split down the middle. I'd say 40% freelance work, 40% teaching. And I've been trying to figure out how to divide my time between the two as an artist and also as a business person, because it would be naive of me to say that like one matters so much more than the other, especially like, I mean, you and I are around the same age, like you're building your, you know, financial health and you're supporting your family and all this stuff. So both of them matter.
So I think immediately you said something huge. So many people that I talk to is like, I got to do freelance. That's the only way to get clout. That's the only way to get respect. That's the only way to pave my own path to do full time me. You know, that's the dream that I see all these other people doing with these massive followings, crushing it for like the biggest clients. Like, I want to be the next Lauren Hom or Eric Marinovich or the Lincoln Design. And you kind of already said, like, it didn't stem from you seeking that work. You focused on yourself. You created work that was true to yourself, and that attracted work. And I think that's like pretty much the biggest takeaway. I think we could probably just call the show done right now, but like, you did a project that was for you and you added marketing tactics to it, and that attracted the work. You know, you weren't going into this project being like, how can I get freelance from this? Maybe you were, but it didn't sound like that.
It was a happy side effect.
It's a byproduct, yeah. Happy side effect. That sounds more fun, though.
Than byproduct? When I think of byproduct, I think of like meat byproduct.
This sounds corporate. I'm from the corporate world for a little bit, so.
I was going to say that, yeah, it was, I always, whenever people ask me like what my favorite project I've ever done is, I always go back to that one because it was the most innocent. Like, I realized after what happened with Daily Dishonesty, the power of series of personal work. And so I kept doing that in different ways and have used it as a career tool, you know, to attract a specific kind of freelance work or to move closer to this kind of niche or topic. I do that now, but I didn't know any of that at the beginning. And it was honestly like my most, I guess, authentic project. But yeah, I mean, similar to what you said, I came into the lettering world and the freelance world thinking that client work was the only way and the only goal until, like, it's funny when you said, like, I want to be the next Lauren Hom, because I get so bashful, because for the longest time, my goal was to be the next Jessica Hish. Like, that was the bar that was set. And I'm like, wow, she, you know, is doing all this cool client work. She's speaking at conferences. She has her own studio. And yeah, and once I got into that, once I kind of broke in and started doing client work, you know, it's great, and it definitely strokes your ego to get the big clients. And of course, some projects have really great budgets. But at the same time, I realized, I was like, oh, wait, I'm still beholden to the client. I still, you know, I'm still a hired hand. And there is only so much client work I can do as well, or want to do. You know, if I want to make more money, I can either increase my rates or I can take on more projects, but that means more time.
So as you're building up the client, there's something behind the scenes, I'm sure. You got the marketing brain and stuff too. You're growing an audience. People are loving you, loving your work, but describe this teaching aspect then, because that comes in the form of, basically teaching is the form of just serving your audience. And for you, did you start noticing like patterns or struggles that people are like telling you within your work? Is that how you started being like, okay, these are areas I feel qualified to teach in? Like, where did this come from? Like the first Skillshare, and then how is it transformed from there? Because you're not only doing, you said 40% freelance. Did you say the other 60% is then teaching?
40 freelance, 40 teaching, 20 mixed speaking, workshops.
Okay. And I still want to throw that into the mix too, because, you know, not outside of just freelance, what are other things people can do? And speaking, that comes with growing an audience and things like that. So the teaching side of things, how did that come about and growing or listening to the audience? Was that pretty much the key, is listening?
You know, the same way I got into teaching, it's very similar to how I got into freelancing. Like, I didn't have a plan. I wish I could say I was, you know, smart and strategic and had a plan. It all just kind of lent itself to the next thing. So I first came in contact with Skillshare because I was working on a passion project called Will Letter for Lunch, where I was passing out flyers to restaurants looking for chalkboard lettering work. And one day I went to go pass them out at like a weekend food fair that happened. And I gave one to a vendor who turned out to be the CEO of Skillshare, which is so ridiculous. But anyways, they had been looking for someone to do a chalkboard lettering class, and I fell in their lap and I said yes, even though I had never taught before. And that was my first kind of intro into teaching, and I really liked it. And the feedback I got from the class was really great. And I look at it now and I'm like, I didn't know anything, but I tried and I put myself out there and it helped some people, and that's great. The way that I figured out, you know, what I was going to teach from there was, you know, like you said, I had an idea of what people were asking me, you know, in comments and in DMs and emails. But at the same time too, what the data showed me was that people knew me as a lettering artist and would, I should probably teach lettering, and people had lettering questions. But my gut told me that, hey, I think I'd actually be more excited to talk about passion projects and creativity and marketing right now. This was in at the end of 2016, I believe. And so I ended up hiring a business coach who was a friend of mine, and she kind of helped me work through it. And I told her, I was like, well, I feel like I should do a lettering class. It makes so much sense. And she was like, well, is that what you want to do? And I was like, yeah, I guess so. And she's like, do people ask you about passion projects? And I'm like, yeah, people ask me how I built my career all the time. Maybe they don't ask about passion projects specifically, but I'd feel more excited to talk about that. And I didn't do any, you know, testing or surveys. Like, I just kind of went for it. And in hindsight, it could have been super risky.
The gut, the instinct, you know, the intuition, it knows. That's what we preach all the time. Logic keeps you safe.
Yeah, I'll get a little bit woo-woo here. The gut knew. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, oh, man, I can't wait to talk about this later in the episode, too, because logic has crept in so much more the further I progress in my business, because it feels like there's more to lose. Therefore, there's less room for, like, trying new things. And anyways, so back to the passion project thing. I ended up, you know, writing a curriculum, breaking down my process, and it was easy for me because I had done six passion projects by that time, so I knew what I was talking about. It felt easy to me, and I realized because I kept getting questions about, you know, how do I build my creative career, if this was something that came easy to me because of my background, like, it had to be teachable to somebody else as well. And so I put it together. I didn't announce it or anything. And I basically just put it out there. And I had been freelancing for almost 5 years at this point, maybe 4.5, and didn't know how people would respond. I, you know, had a very small email list, maybe a couple thousand people, because no one told me about email marketing as a freelancer.
I want to talk about that too as a channel that you're building. You know, I want to talk about all these different streams outside of just freelance. Like, this is gold.
Yeah, and so I put this class out there, you know, called Passion to Paid. Obviously, it had all of me sprinkled around it, the name and the branding. And I put it out there. And I remember thinking, okay, I probably invested $5,000, maybe a little bit more, in my business coach, in filming the class, like, in, you know, putting it together. I don't think I'm counting my time here, but I was like, as long as I can make my money back, it'll be worth it. Because with Skillshare, they produced the whole thing for me, and that was really great. But I was like, okay, well, you know, it'll be a good learning experience no matter what. And the, you know, enrollment was going to be open for 7 days. I remember I was in Vietnam at the time, and I pressed the, like, send button on the email and opened the cart.
Open cart. Isn't that just like, that's like the woo, like, oh my God, what the hell's going to happen when you hit that open cart email? Yes.
And I went to bed because it was super late while where I was. And I woke up the next morning and I had made $10,000. And I was like, what the fuck just happened? And the launch continued. And I think at the end of that launch, I had made $70,000. And I was like, I've never even booked a client project this big. Like, what just happened?
I appreciate you talking numbers. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I always like to be transparent. And this is why I'm such a big proponent too of, you know, you got to try what works for you, because for the longest time, in terms of diversifying your income stream, I thought that maybe opening an online shop with prints and mugs and stuff was the next logical step.
Everybody says.
Totally.
People are like, client work. Okay. And then next, I think, you know, from here, I should be doing my own shop. Those are the first two steps I did.
Oh, totally. And, you know, I never went that route, but that was the only thing I had seen really modeled from the people I had been following. And I had heard from people too, like, you know, at certain points, like their shop was generating tens of thousands of dollars. And I'm sure if you're like an Aaron Draplin or like a Jessica Hish.
Or Lisa Congdon or Andy J, you know.
Absolutely. And so I think seeing, maybe because I had sold a couple of posters on like Society 6, like on my own, and, you know, didn't really make that much money from it, I had kind of written off posters as like not my thing. And so because I had kind of checked that off, I think teaching was the next natural avenue for exploring what diversifying could look like, because, okay, maybe, you know, with lettering, it's tough because like it's a phrase, it's on a specific product. And like, unless someone wants both of those specific things, maybe they like your work, but the product isn't necessarily for them. And with this class, I was so blown away because I didn't realize how many people wanted to learn from me. I thought I would sell, you know, 20, 25 spots. The class was priced at $249. It was
steal.
Thank you. This 10 week program, which I've condensed since then, because I mean, so many things, so much, there's only so much time in the day. And so when I saw that, I was like, okay, maybe teaching is my thing. Cause I had been teaching in-person workshops just around lettering before that. And I really enjoy the human element. I love chatting with people. I like, you know, interacting that way. And so that worked for me. And it kind of hit the sweet spot. From there, I got more strategic. I was like, okay, what should my next course be? I, you know, looked more at the numbers and, you know, asked people what they wanted, that kind of stuff.
When you say the numbers and the data, where are you sourcing those? Like for me, I have like a Google Sheet sourcing like everybody's biggest struggle. And I can just like create these buckets and pinpoint. So I know I'm not just like throwing spaghetti against the wall to see what sticks. You know, I know I'm creating something targeted.
Good for you. I'm not a spreadsheet person. I just go off of emails, DMs, comments.
Do you like organize them or anything, or just have it in your head knowing like, shit, so many people talk about murals.
I just have it in my head. So I would say for me, the sweet spot is thinking about what stands out from, you know, the hundreds of DMs and comments that are coming through, you know, in the last 6 months. And because if it's coming through consistently enough, I'll think about it. And I'm sure eventually I'll have a spreadsheet where I can target specific things.
You get volumes more than I would get at the moment. I started in the beginning, so it's easier to maintain now. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a system, but like if you're getting 20, 50 DMs, emails, messages a day, that's a lot harder to maintain.
Oh, yeah. It's been a struggle for me just to you know, like you said, want to serve and like want to be helpful, but then set boundaries for your time, which is why classes are a great way to do that, because you can serve a large group of people at once with the same information without having to necessarily spend the same amount of time on each person. You can kind of, that's why I do Q&As too, or public Q&As on Instagram now, because 20 people probably have the same question. And if I can make one video, it can help a lot of people at once versus me writing the answer in a DM. That was something that I've done, I don't know, in the last 6 months that's been helpful.
That's a huge tip in itself.
Totally. Free, paid, whatever you want. Yeah. Like, it's cool. Like, as a freelancer, as an entrepreneur, you get to figure out what you want to make and where you set your bar in terms of, here's what I want to offer for free value. Here's what I want to charge for. Like, it's kind of the Wild West. Everyone's kind of just going off of their gut feeling. For me, it's a combination of what am I noticing people ask? And I try not to be on Instagram that much every day because it just is all consuming sometimes, just a constant stream of input. It's that coupled with what am I excited to teach? Like, that's one thing I've struggled with as a like business owner with lots of different income streams is like, shoot, like I could make 20 different things right now. Which one is going to be the most profitable, which one's going to be the most fun to do, what makes the most sense. And so I try to come at it with an intersection of that, of like, here's what I feel pumped to teach, that I feel knowledgeable about, that I, you know, as a teacher, if you're not genuinely excited about the subject matter, like everyone remembers their like middle school or high school teachers who were jazzed about what they were teaching and those who were like just kind of there. I feel like that's the difference. And because a lot of what I teach is built off of, you know, all the stuff that I've just done in my career naturally, it's easy for me to teach those things. It's like, how did I get started painting murals? I painted one in my house, or I just bought some big boards and started. I didn't wait for anyone to say, okay, now you can paint murals. It was the same thing with my passion project, Daily Dishonesty. It was like, haha, I have this idea. I'm going to make it. Like the audacity of that 21-year-old me to just do that. But that's what has propelled my career forward every single time, is just feeling something or feeling drawn towards it and then doing it imperfectly.
That's great. Don't wait for permission. And earlier you said you got lucky when, you know, you handed whatever to a Skillshare person and you attracted that job. You just proved the fact that I try to preach is like luck favors action. If you're just sitting on the couch waiting for this opportunity to be delivered to your front door, like a fresh hot piping pizza, it just doesn't work that way. You know, you have to take some level of action and being uncomfortable. Like when you get a feeling of discomfort for you, like this, how do you tell your brain to just shut up, logic? You know, I'm going with my gut here. You know, how do you just lean into that fear until it disappears? Like, were you even nervous about doing these Will Letter for Lunch and just putting yourself out there? You're extroverted like me, so it's maybe a little bit easier from an introvert. But like these things that you want to do that are very uncomfortable, how do you get over the fear and just do it anyway?
I will say that I relied a lot on my naivete when I first started out. I definitely think that you can start a creative career anytime, but because I just happened to be 21 and more fearless, I think not even fearless. I guess I was fearless because I didn't know. Like,
no fucks given, basically, right?
Yeah. I wanted to do something. I didn't see why not. I had nothing to lose as well. Like, you know, there was nothing on the line. It maybe felt a little bit more uncomfortable to, you know, share personal work on the internet versus in a classroom like I was used to. But other than that, you know, with the encouragement of my friends, it didn't seem like a big deal. And like I think the way I see it is you build confidence slowly over time with action, like you said. And so by the time I got to Will Letter for Lunch, you know, I was definitely nervous. Even though I'm an extrovert, I don't like cold approaching strangers. Like I don't send cold pitches as a freelancer. And with Will Letter for Lunch, I was so nervous going into businesses and pitching myself as like, hey, I'm a chalk lettering artist in the neighborhood, and I wanted to know if you need chalk lettering for your chalkboards. But every time I did it, it got a little bit less scary. Like it's like
normalized.
Everything normalizes. I think that's one thing too I'd love to tell people is, for better or for worse, everything normalizes. If you take baby steps towards something that makes you uncomfortable, it'll get easier over time. It's like, you know, learning to play the piano or being a runner. I hate running, but I know if I did it every day, a little bit more every day, I'm sure it would become easy.
It's like a muscle.
At some point. Exactly. It's just a muscle. And similar to a muscle, like you can also lose it if you don't practice it for a while. And I think for better or worse, it's like the stuff that scares you, you can practice getting good at it and it'll get less scary. And, you know, the stuff that is, I don't know where I'm going with this now, my brain just kind of trailed off. But yeah, like it, by the time I got to Will Letter for Lunch, it wasn't really a big deal, because what I ask myself a lot of times too is, you know, I'm still a pretty logic driven person. Like, but if you use that to your advantage, right? What's the worst that can happen? And the worst that can happen is, okay, I put myself out there, I hand out these flyers. It's 5 minutes of me feeling slightly nervous, the same way if I was introducing myself to someone at a party or something. That 5 minutes of discomfort for potential payoff of like, maybe these new doors will open, who knows? The worst case scenario is that they don't email me back. And with that in mind, I was like, oh, there's a no-brainer then. I should do this. That was the exact same logic I used when I was so nervous about quitting my job, whether it was the right or the wrong move. Was I completely decimating my career by leaving the ad industry, you know, 9 months in? What if lettering didn't work out? But I used logic and I said, okay, I'm unhappy at my advertising job. If I don't do anything, I'll continue to stay unhappy at my advertising job. There's so much out of my control. If I try lettering and it doesn't work out, the worst thing that's going to happen, or like the next thing that's going to happen, is I burn through more of my savings than I'm comfortable with. You know, I need to go back to advertising. I still have my resume. I can go get another ad job, maybe not at the same agency because that would be weird, but I still have my credentials. So if I try and fail, I'm back to where I started. And if I do nothing, I'm where I started. So it was a no-brainer to try. And this is where, again, my young age played to my advantage in terms of my confidence, because I was like, what's the difference between getting an entry-level ad job at 23 versus 24? It's like negligible. And I hadn't, you know, cemented my roots in advertising quite yet. So I was lucky that I had flexibility, I guess, in that regard. And yeah, I just slowly built it up. I'm still building it up now. Like, people think I'm super confident all the time. Like you were saying earlier, like pressing open cart on, you know, a new product or a thing you're launching feels so terrifying. But I think that creativity in itself is vulnerable. Like, even if you don't share it online, it's super vulnerable to like have the like audacity to sit down and draw something, or like to make something for fun. Like, it takes a lot of, I think, internal work to be even able to get to that point. So anyone who's baseline creative and making stuff, you've accomplished a lot, really, trust me. As someone who just went through a bout of creative block, I now have a newfound appreciation for when I could just sit down and make stuff. But yeah, I think that when you practice making what you want and pursuing your own ideas, and then the next step is putting it out there, you start to build confidence, and then maybe you put it out there, and then you do something like a Will Letter for Lunch, or you share it with someone, you know, in your industry. Like, you keep inching towards those next levels of discomfort, and it gets easier over time. And one thing that my old business coach would ask me a lot of times when I was scared of something, or like, you know, scenarioing out the worst case thing, was she was like, okay, well, if that happens, will you survive? Will you be okay? And the answer was usually, like, was always yes. Because the things I was worrying about, of like, I remember we were talking about potentially doing Facebook ads for my courses someday. And I was like, I could never, like, the idea of, you know, popping up in someone's Facebook feed and them leaving a mean comment because they don't know me. Like, I can't market to cold leads. I can only market to like my warm Instagram audience. And she was like, okay, well, if you got the mean comment, would you survive? And yeah, I would. And she also reminded me, everybody who's in my warm audience now, who like knows me and loves me, was cold at some point. That logic really helped me to get over, you know, that hump of putting myself out there even more. And if it helps anyone too, like, I still haven't run Facebook ads. I'm on my way.
Get on it. Get that back-end ads manager.
I know.
My coach helped me and blew my mind. I'm like, wow, this is really intense and in-depth with different audiences you could create.
Wow.
Makes your head hurt a little bit. This could be all fine and great. A lot of people who are listening, or a lot of people who are in your audience, they're just finding their groove. They're trying to figure out what move they should even make, or what their next step should be. And that's great. Like, I've been doing this for a long time. You've been doing this for a long time. You have an audience. I've been building an audience. But not everybody has that. And I think people are just looking where to start off. So people have this pressure to think they have to do freelance. And I want to encourage them, like, you don't. And I think you said it best. Like, you literally just gave three steps right here that I think are perfect for people trying to figure out their groove. Practice making what you want. Pursue your ideas and put it out there. Like, by doing those three things, consistently taking action over time, like, it's like planting seeds, you know, and you never know which one's going to like pop off. Or I use that baseball reference too. And I believe maybe it's you too, but like, you need at bats. I think I heard it originally for Gary Vee. And the more at-bats and up to the plates you get, you know, the sooner you get to hitting that home run. For those who are just starting, you know, what are some tips for people to just start finding their voice? Like, if you were to redo it all again, you had no audience, how about I rephrase it like that? Zero foundation, you're going out into the world and just going to, like, start figuring out again and creating content. What would you do?
Oh, man. I mean, my gut answer is, like, I would probably just do what I did before. Like, the way that I stumbled into my career was by making something that I wanted to make. And maybe because I was still a student and we were doing more self-initiated work, I don't know. But if I had no audience and I was going to start something, and this is actually something I've been thinking of, you know.
And sprinkle in some of those like marketing tactics that you've learned along the way that you didn't know in the beginning, because I think that's what people are going to help grasp early.
Absolutely. Yeah. So of course, you know, making what you want. So identifying what it is that you would want to make. And so I always use the lens of a passion project as like a tangible thing that I'm going to make with whatever inspiration or ideas that are circulating around in my mind. And so using the lens of a project, like I unknowingly, because of my ad background, branded Daily Dishonesty as this, you know, neatly packaged up project and then sent it out into the world as its own thing versus, you know, I didn't even have Instagram at the time, but that like wasn't a thing in 2012 for me, at least. Instead of just posting, you know, the occasional one to my Instagram mixed in with all my other stuff, I package it up as its own thing. And so from a marketing standpoint for your own ideas, can you find something that you can make multiple pieces of that could live as its own little like mini gallery show or, you know, collection that goes together that not only is easier to market because people can see like, oh, you know, there are multiple pieces under this one idea. It also makes a really great portfolio piece, whether or not you want to freelance. Like the byproduct is probably that you're going to get some freelance work. I know.
The happy side effect. That's hilarious. You're corporate.
Oh no.
ROIs, GDP.
Oh man. But yeah, when you package it up, it shows other people too that like, hey, this person can think beyond just individual pieces. They can think in a series. They can, whether it means it's a campaign or whatnot, it's just beneficial, I think, to work in that format. That's what I've always naturally done. Of course, make one-off pieces when you feel like it. It's, you know, your creativity, your life, do what you want. But in order to get the most like punch or the most juice for your squeeze, I always recommend packaging it up as its own project. And not every idea warrants its own website or it's a big, you know, red carpet rollout. Some ideas are just smaller. But what I try to teach my students and what I do in my own life is like, okay, like, is this an idea that I can build out into a big thing? Is this more of just like a single Instagram post? And then I figure out, what do I feel like making? Do I have the bandwidth to do a big project right now? What schedule can I commit to updating this project? And so there's, I think passion projects run the gamut of like a singular personal piece all the way to like almost like a new business, you know, starting a whole series. Like a podcast is a passion project.
Changed my life as a passion project. Yeah. Changed everything.
It's a really great way because it's like, okay, there's this singular topic or the umbrella topic that we're going to be making one thing underneath. It's coming out consistently. Yeah. And that's honestly what I did with Daily Dishonesty too. So if I was starting from scratch now, I would still tap into my personal well of inspiration of what are things that are human and relatable, like things that I like, inside jokes, you know, just almost like the little things in life that we don't pay that much attention to. I think those are the juiciest bits because they're relatable. Like think about memes and how weird they are, but how I have never been so quick to send people stuff as when I see a meme that I know that they're going to love. Yeah. And I think a lot of us feel that way. And not that you need to memeify your creative work, but if you think about that format, it's like, where is that intersection between stuff that a lot of other people feel and stuff that I'm super into and stuff that I could, you know, there. I always tell people, think of it as, what are those six categories that if you were a contestant on Jeopardy, what are the six categories you would love to show up where you would absolutely crush it? Ooh, those are your categories.
That's such a good analogy for how to like find that secret sauce, that recipe, you know?
Like what are the things you know a ton about that you could talk forever about? Like those are those good categories. And I have to thank my grandma because I watched so much Jeopardy growing up and that's probably where that analogy comes from. But I always was like on the edge of my seat as a kid looking at like when they announced the categories, seeing if there were any that I knew. And like, of course, there are some that you're like, I don't know anything about that. And some of them you're like, I would take every single question in that category.
Category of bread.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, totally. And so I think that would be my best advice. It's funny you ask that because I've been trying to think about that myself in terms of where my career is going to go. Like if I start, lately I've been thinking like, oh, in the future, it would be really fun to do something with food, not in a lettering or a design way, but like a food thing, like a food blog, or I don't know if I'd open a restaurant. I have no idea, but that's where my brand has been on the fringe, like lingering. And I keep thinking like, but how the fuck would I start a food business? And I have to go back and tell myself the exact same way that you started a lettering business from scratch. Like it's applicable to so many different areas, anything creative, especially creative, but probably other areas as well. And so I have to remind myself that everyone starts from scratch. Like I, again, wish I was this strategic and you know, had this much foresight, but I didn't realize that by kicking my career off with a series of projects, you know, Daily Dishonesty, Ex-Boyfriend Tears, Will Letter for Lunch. Feel free to Google them if you don't know what I'm talking about. It's probably too much to explain here. But by starting with projects that were based around my personality, my interests, like that set the foundation for not only freelance work to come in, but for fans to start forming. And I never really thought of myself that way until, you know, my audience started growing and growing and growing. And I began, you know, actually getting fans. And I was like, whoa, like, why do people feel this connection with my work? And I think it's because I built it from an authentic place. I try to be the same way I am online as I actually am in person. And
so important.
It's just it's the most frictionless way for me to exist, because it sounds so exhausting to have, like, you know, Instagram Lauren and then real me as well. But that's another tricky thing that I think a lot of, especially, you know, sensitive artists like myself struggle with, is like, oh man, I have to have my like digital version of myself now and my real self. And like, you're constantly worrying about how you're presenting in both areas and what's too much to share, what's not enough to share. And for me, it's always just been through the lens of my personality, my interests, and my work, and how do those things converge. And because I built my passion projects around my interests and my personality, when I went to sell my very first, you know, course, Passion to Paid, the response, my agent likes to hypothesize that it's because I was sharing my work and sharing advice for so many years for free, because that's just what I thought I was supposed to do and what I wanted to do, what I felt naturally, like, that's what I naturally gravitated towards. When I did finally have an offering, he was like, maybe people jumped on it because they were just excited to like give you something back. And I never thought of it that way. But, you know, you can get so much free information on the internet now. And I don't know if you feel this way, but I get overwhelmed, like information overwhelm sometimes, getting advice from too many sources. And so I definitely have my handful of like people that I've picked over the years and continue to pick of like, this is going to be my go-to person for this thing or this thing. And if we can be that for other people, that's amazing.
I think you said a couple important things here. So people getting started and you feeling like you have to like monetize what you're doing right away, and the way to do that immediately is freelance. Like, you're putting yourself in a position to just like burn out, hate what you're doing. And you said it beautifully, and I think it parallels exactly what I did. You build that foundation around your interests. You know, motivational pizza-related things were what I always loved, and ever since I was a kid, I was doing that kind of shit, and it shows up in my work today, and you just, like, give over time, and then when you have an offering, you know, you've built this like, know, and trust factor. Like, that's all it is with the audience, and people want to support you. Like, people would buy stuff, not necessarily... People I know bought my Procreate brushes and they don't even have a fucking iPad, you know?
They just open the files on their computer and just kind of like look at them.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a really nice instruction PDF. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's building that foundation over time and showing up as yourself consistently and expressing yourself. I think those are all like the key things that I didn't know when getting started. I think you kind of stumbled into it, but you still had that knack from like your advertising. I didn't have any of that. And it's both just been an evolution over time. So, but other things you do too, like you do teaching. I want to just get these other ideas out there for people. So freelance isn't the only way. So teaching, whether that's courses, that's God, what else? What else?
In-person workshops.
In-person workshops, you know, those are options. Digital goods. So if you have people asking you over and over again, like, how can I use that same filter on these photos? You can kick out presets for people. You build resources. You provide so much value. Like, I think in your newsletter or in your stories, you have these little blocks of just gold mines of value that you can direct people to. So I have a question. Go to this resource over here. You know, your homework. So you're finding all these different avenues outside of freelance, which I think is great. You know, you have that 20% bucket. So if freelance went away, you know, you still have 60% built up two allocations that you could do, like things like affiliates. I know you do affiliates for people as well. Maybe sponsorships, speaking. So there's so many different routes. Is there anything that I'm missing that you could like provide someone or ideas?
For me, those are the mains that you touched on. There are other people who license their artwork for, you know, home goods or stationery or products. I don't do a ton of that. I think I've licensed all of 4 things in my entire career.
But you tried it to know if it was something that could become a channel of your business or not. Like, you've tried a bunch of different shit. I've tried a bunch of different shit. And like, freelance for me is only maybe 10 to 15% of my revenue now, you know? So it's wild that, you know, you have other things that make up more than your freelance, when I think some people see you and think you as like the freelance person.
Yeah, it is interesting. Like, I was thinking back to a conversation where a friend was telling me that, you know, I think they were selling t-shirts, but they weren't selling well. And they had gotten the idea to sell t-shirts because their friend was making a killing with t-shirts. And so they're like, we'll try that too. And it just didn't work for them. And I think that when you brought up the licensing thing of like, you know, it wasn't quite my thing, I never actively pursued licensing. It's interesting because I naturally got approached for freelance after Daily Dishonesty, and I didn't have any control over that. It was like people saw my work and that's how they responded to it. I rarely have those 4 times I've licensed things. Those were people reaching out to me. I've never made an active pursuit to license. Maybe I could someday, but I feel like how I found my place in terms of how I diversified my income streams was started with one thing and then kept branching. I was like, I'll try one more thing and one more thing, but also at the same time noticing what's just coming my way as well. Maybe if for some reason Daily Dishonesty spurred a stream of licensing deals, my career would look much different. But it's almost like, you know, like right place, right time. Like the thing that's within your control, and I know you've talked about this too, like the stuff that's within your control is all we can really worry about. Like my creative output, what am I making? What am I publishing? And opportunities will come. Like maybe if I hadn't have gone to that food fair and passed out my flyer, I wouldn't have done a Skillshare class, most likely not. And I wouldn't have kind of snowballed into doing more teaching. Maybe I would have found my way here through another channel eventually. But I always tell people too, like, just if your gut says, yeah, that sounds kind of cool when an opportunity presents itself, why not give it a try? But we also know that before opportunities even present themselves, we have people we look up to who are examples of things already that we are like, that looks cool, I want to try that. So for me, it's been a combination of me actively pursuing things that I saw other people doing that looked cool, and then just seeing what comes my way. Because you really never know. I knew I wanted to do speaking eventually. And so that was always on my radar, probably because my favorite designers, you know, John Contino, Jessica Hish, were doing Same. Speaking. And that just seemed cool.
Yeah. So I like it. Be active, but also be open for like the universe to throw you a curveball that you didn't even see. I never thought I would do coaching. And now that's my business, you know, like I would have never saw that because I was so focused on freelance. So I like that. Stay active, pursue your interests, but also be open for opportunities to come your way.
Oh yeah. And also on the open front, like one thing that I had a hard time with, I don't know, 2 years ago, maybe after the first year of me teaching online courses and it like starting to work, I was having a struggle, an identity crisis of like, wait, but I'm a freelancer. Like if I take any time away from freelancing, I'm somehow less of a designer. Like I had so cemented my definition of what it meant to be a successful designer.
You gave yourself this identity.
Yes, exactly. And so be open to redefining what your career as a creative person might look like. It's been a journey for me because honestly just boils down to like, what are other people going to think? And we all know that's not productive thinking. It's not a good way to live intuitively or authentically. But we're humans, we're social creatures. Of course, those are going to cross our minds sometimes. But the best things in my career have happened when I either haven't been thinking about what people are going to think or squash the thought and like get it out of my mind.
No, I love it. And real quick, while we're at it then, we've mentioned about Passionate Paid. I believe it's dropping today potentially as we talked beforehand.
Yeah, crazy timing.
So like with that dropping today, what can people expect with that? Everything we just talked about, you know, you're stuck and you're looking to kind of kick things off in the right way. Maybe you're not focused on freelance right now, but you want to really kick things off from that personal perspective with a passion project. You know, what can people expect by if they want to join what you're offering?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm a big believer that passion projects are beneficial no matter what, even if you don't have a goal in mind. But yeah, Passion to Paid is basically this class that I've launched. I think this is the sixth time I've launched it, which is so wild. I basically teach it twice a year, and it is everything you need to know about how to come up with that like big idea and then turn it into a tangible project, package it up, market it, you know, to, you know, on social media, pitch it to different design blogs, like get it circulating, like you being the one kind of nudging things rather than having someone find you. And then the end of the course too is I want to give people who maybe haven't freelanced before but are interested in it, like I basically walk you through, here are the basics you will need in case, you know, what happened with me with Daily Dishonesty, right? Like I put this project out there, it caught wind, and then I had all these freelance inquiries coming in. I want to equip people with the tools to handle those inquiries if they start coming in. But I've had students use the class for launching blogs, for launching lines of products. Like it can really be, it's a really great starting place just to get your ideas on paper and figure out how to make them tangible and how you might want to put them out in the world.
So it's not just for visual artists who are letterers. It's not just for that.
That's the number one question I get is this a lettering class? Nope. I've had photographers, I've had illustrators, letterers, bloggers, like some people who own restaurants. Like I'd say primarily because I'm a visual artist, it speaks to visual artists, but I really do think the format can be used. Like, oh my gosh, I was actually just thinking about how the format that I teach too can be used just to like make social media content for a brand or for a person. And so
content creators.
Yeah. Kind of like that. I know there's like a weird tension between like the term artist and content creator, but I think as artists in the digital age, we are kind of at the intersection. And
I would call it the intersection too. You create art, but it's still content.
Yeah. It's so easy to shit on like the word content, but
I feel like the traditional artists are the ones who are getting butthurt about that, you know? I've been fine tuning my oil painting and this is not content. This is expressional art. And that's fine.
Yeah. I'm really interested in helping people who want to find that intersection of doing creative work that you like, but giving it that marketing edge of, oh shit, this is actually going to do something for my career and get me closer to where I want to go. So yeah, that is launching today. It feels so weird to say today.
Yes. I know, right? It's been something I've had to learn how to do.
But yeah, I've had the pleasure of teaching over, 1,600 students. Ooh. Now, which is so wild. But yeah, it's my favorite thing to teach. I teach a bunch of classes, but it's by far my most popular and my favorite because, you know, I was going to say something earlier when you were saying about, you know, what you're give in terms of what you're putting out online. There are certain things that feel easier to give for some people, you know, like you'll always have that friend who, you know, is so generous, you know, baking you cookies and sharing their food. Or you might have that friend who's really generous with their time and listens to you and is really empathetic. The things that you're naturally good at giving are the things you should lean into for your creative work. And that's what I hope to help people discover too. And in Passion to Paid, and just by following me on Instagram, is like, you don't have to do it all. Like, it sometimes feels like we have to solve all the problems and be helpful to everybody, but I'm a big fan of getting specific and like making a bigger impact with a smaller group of people and then watching it spread from there.
Go for depth instead of casting a wide net, for sure.
that's what all my projects have done. And I'm really curious too, like in 10 years when I'm launching this class again, what other projects I might have made. Like, I'm so excited too, because this round of Passion to Paid is revamped from the previous ones. Like, because I've been teaching it for 3 years, I have so much more stuff now that I can incorporate, and things that I've learned and new structures for projects that I've encountered. Like, for the very first time this year, I launched a passion project that wasn't just a series of images that is what my passion projects normally are. I created a website called What the Fuck Should I Letter? WTFshouldIletter.com, based off of an insight that a lot of my audience has a hard time coming up with interesting stuff to letter. You asked earlier, how do you find your voice? And for me, it's always been through writing my own stuff, but a lot of artists don't think they're good writers, which I think is a block a lot of us have. So I created this site that it's just a phrase generator of weird stuff that you can letter. And it's the first time I made a project that was serving someone else instead of just being like eye candy or entertaining. And it's been really rewarding, but it's stuff like that that I'm really excited to have worked into the curriculum, because the more I learn, like basically I can only teach my students as much as I know, as I've experienced. And so because I've been doing the class for 3 years, I felt like it was time for a little update, a little special sauce.
Dope. Okay. Well, real quick, let's move on to a couple quick rapid fires. We'll wrap it up, get you your time back. So I believe I asked you this before. If you're on death row, what would your last slice of pizza be? Have I asked you that? Was that a question?
You asked me and I got fucking roasted for my answer.
Not by me.
I think by the internet, because it's justified. My answer is
vegan,
is the wrong answer.
Pizza, vegan pizza, what was it? Pineapple? Oh shit. Let people enjoy things. Do not roast Lauren after, what is it?
It's pineapple. Oh, yeah.
It's not for me. I pick it off. I try it here and there just to see if my flavors, my taste buds have like updated themselves. But still not for me. So that's still your jam?
It's tied to like my childhood. We used to order so much like Domino's Hawaiian pizza, and I don't order it anymore. But yeah, I think that's what it would be. Like there's a nostalgic element to it.
Do not roast Lauren after she just melted your face with fucking value today. So stop it if you're listening. Okay, here's a new one. I've never asked anybody about this one yet. So if money was no issue and you had full financial freedom, what would your main creative passion output be? What would you just do just to do, and you didn't need anything from it in return?
You know, that's so funny. This is a question that I've been asked privately in the past that I've always known the answer to, that actually is probably going to inform a pivot in my career sometime in the next 5 years. I feel like I'm being super like aloof right now. Anyways, I've always joked that if I won the lottery and didn't have to work, I would go to culinary school. Like for a decade, I've been saying this. And I just had the realization during my creative slump while I was like thinking about my life that, oh wait, I don't have to wait till I win the lottery to do that. Like sometimes I forget now that I like run a successful business that I can self-fund things. I forget that all the time. And
you got your own seed money.
Exactly. And so I was like, whoa, I can like, yeah, seed my own dreams. And so yeah, right now, like I've been thinking and planning in the future, I'd love to go to culinary school and do something with food. I feel like it's going to happen in the next 5 years. I need to emotionally get ready for some sort of pivot or sabbatical, or it's more emotional than
5 years is on the long end right now. By next year, something might have manifested on the side with another passion project through it. So
who knows? I'm open. So yeah, cook. I would cook if I didn't have to work.
Okay, cool. You got food on your back wall in a mural. It just makes sense, you know, for those watching the video. Okay. Most important one. Do you believe in aliens or other life forms existing outside of our solar system?
Ooh. You know, such a shitty answer to you. I've never really thought about it. I feel like I've spent all of 30 seconds ever thinking about that in my life. I'm going to go with I feel like it's the same answer I use for religion. I don't not think that they could exist. So like my answer leans towards yes. Like I'm agnostic. I didn't grow up in a religious household, and I've chosen agnostic because I don't have enough conviction to be an atheist. And so, yeah, I'm going to go with it's possible. but I never think about it.
I feel that is an extremely fair response a lot of people can relate to.
Okay, good. I'm trying to be honest.
All right, where can people go to follow you online and support you?
Ooh, Pete. So people can find me pretty much everywhere as Home Sweet Home. It's like Home Sweet Home without the E's in home, except for Twitter, but I'm never really on Twitter, so don't even worry about it. It's Home Tweet Home in case you're very active on Twitter for some reason. I lost the password to my Home Sweet Home Twitter, and so I had to make a new one.
That's hilarious.
Like so long that I didn't even remember any of the login details. Anyways, yeah, Home Sweet Home pretty much everywhere on the internet. I'm fairly active on Instagram. I run a weekly newsletter called Home Work. I got so fucking lucky with my last name. But similar to the What the Fuck Should I Letter project that I mentioned, if you are looking for a little bit of a jumping off point in terms of creating, it's every Friday I email out a different creative prompt to kind of get the creative juices flowing, give you some ideas. They're usually all related to helping you come out of your shell, find your voice, like market your work. And so I've been running that for almost 3 years now, which is so wild to me because I can't think of anything I've done consistently on like a week to week basis for 3 years.
It's a lot.
But I'd say that's my main activity online.
I'll be sure to link all that in the show notes as well as a link to P2P.
Oh yeah.
Thank you so much for your time today, and let's make round 3 not take over 100 episodes later.
I can't believe it's been 100 episodes. Yes, that sounds great.
All right, well, have a good rest of your day. I appreciate you. Later.
Thanks, you too. Bye.
PC family, Lauren freaking Hom. Do what you do best. If you found value in what Lauren had to say today, go blow her up on Instagram or email, wherever, and share with her your biggest takeaway. Again, share it on Instagram stories and make sure to connect and make sure to tag us so I can reshare it. Thanks again, Lauren. We always appreciate your time and your creative genius here. Again, don't sleep on this next round of Passion to Paid with Lauren. Visit P2P Scotty. That's P, the number 2, P, Scotty with a Y.com to learn more and enroll in her step-by-step course, Passion to Paid, on how to powerfully launch your creative career with a successful, shareable passion project. And remember, lock in those bonuses by August 5th at midnight Eastern time. You got to lock it in before that. And you can also save 10% at checkout with Perspective 10. And if this show has helped you along your creative grind anyway, there are two ways you can support what we're building here. First up is by financially backing the show over at patreon.com/perspectivepodcast, like my family at Iron Bean Coffee Company and Tony Minix do. And the second way is to subscribe and leave a rating and review over at Apple Podcasts or iTunes. Not only does this help the show climb the charts in the arts design category, but more importantly, it locks you in as a future listener of the week. Like this week's Listener of the Week, and this one comes from Simon Cherney, titled "Tis Gouda Stuff," and he states, "Not to sound cheesy, I have listened to a couple episodes while back, but just recently started listening to a lot more episodes and watched some of his Instagram live videos. A lot of the stuff he talks about and cover about design and life, I really resonate with. Good stuff, keep it up. It motivates me to do more things of my creative passion, so..." Thank you, Simon. I appreciate it so much, brother. And as I sign off, I got to give a huge shout out to my podcast editor, Anya Brennan, my executive assistant, Paige Garland, video specialist, Colton Bacher, social media coordinator, Hannah Schick, and Nick Jenkins of Bluka for all the dope theme music you hear on this show. And as I sign off, I want to continue to encourage you to keep showing up, keep putting in the work, and keep creating. You got this.